Ignition sequence start. The engines are on. 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast, a place for conversation with church leaders about social media, web trends, and anything else our host wants to talk about. Neil Smith is the Vice President of Social Media and Innovation at Denham & Company, lives in Texas, loves the Spurs, and exploring the world with his family. Jay Cranda is the online pastor at Saddleback Church, lives in California, loves the Lakers and drinking black cold brew coffee, and once could do a heel flip. To engage with the show, use the hashtag SMC Podcast. Let's join the show.
Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Neil Smith, and I'm joined by my good buddy Jay Cranda. Jay, I'm excited to be on this podcast with you today.
Are you feeling more Texan by every moment that goes by?
I'm feeling very American because we're in the middle of the Olympics, and I'm feeling very Texan because I'm in 100 degree heat every single day, except I was in Southern California last week, and it was perfect, as it always is. And then I like get off the airplane in Texas and my glasses fog up and I just start sweating immediately.
Yeah, I do not, as I tell everybody, like, this is how my life is all the time. I don't know why people live anywhere else. So
yeah.
Outside of cheaper real estate.
So on my drive home, I'm literally 3 miles from the office here at Dunham & Company in Plano, Texas. And we have a field on my drive home, and I'm in the city, but there's a field of Longhorn cows, you know, that's literally like across the street from my townhome. And that was something I did not see every day in Brooklyn, New York. So anyways, we got some fun stuff to talk about. So we got to jump into the show. Before we're talking about the Olympics today, but we've got a couple of fun things to talk about before that. We talked about last podcast, maybe two podcasts ago, about the shift with Instagram stories versus Snapchat.
Yeah.
What are you doing? What are you paying attention to? What are you seeing as the trend? Is it growing? Is it changing? What do you
think? There are so many great GIFs and memes out there right now of like people in school, like cheating off somebody else's paper. And it's like, it's like Instagram to Snapchat.
Yep.
And obviously we talk through, you know, some of those things. And I think at the end of the day, I do find more and more the Instagram experience is conflicting because you have the feed and then you have the side scroll.
It's like two different social networks in the same social network.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like it's weird because it's almost like what I would want. Like I think back in the day, like you wanted everything in the same place. Like right when apps came out, you wanted everything. You want everybody on your app. So let's put everything in there. And now it's kind of like, no, like let's have specialty apps. Like that probably makes way more sense. So like, I don't know, like I kind of love hate it and I'm still trying to figure it out. But at the end of the day, I see a lot more people using it still. And I'm seeing more views myself and I don't know if it's inflated.
What do you see? What's your percentage on each? Can you notice? Are you keeping like a tally?
I haven't been, I never got a great following on Snapchat. So like, I think I have like, I definitely have a 60% boost on Instagram, but yeah. I haven't been watching it heavily. It's weird. And I think it's just naturally the way Snapchat and even Instagram stories are. I don't necessarily think about who's viewing my content because it tends to be, at least for Snapchat, it's so personal with a couple people. It's funny. My wife, I was talking to my wife about this. I was asking her about Instagram stories and with Snapchat, and like, she literally has 10 people she's friends with on Snapchat, and there are 9 of them are her girlfriends, and one of them is me. I'm the only male she follows on Snapchat, and she literally doesn't want to grow it. She's like, no, like Snapchat is just for my like 10 people. Like I don't need anything else. And it's almost like that's how, like, and I know Snapchat is done great at with stories and so forth, but a lot of people that don't like those features are the people that I feel like we're like the early adopters of Snapchat and just like, no, I use it for my 10 friends.
Yeah.
But I'm noticing a lot of people using Instagram stories. So it keeps me, you know, aware of it. How about you?
Yeah. I mean, I see probably 8 times the view on my Instagram, you know, story post than I do on my snaps. And so I see like 60 on most snaps, and I see about 400 to 500 on most Instagram story posts. So for me, it's kind of like, I'm going to be where people are paying attention. If that's what I want, if I want to share things with the largest audience, I guess, you know, And so it's kind of like, what am I doing, you know, or what's even the goal in any of it? But I'm just experimenting. But I will say that I'm frustrated on Instagram because I want the filters, you know, like I want the temperature thing, or I want the fun filters of where I am. And so that I miss that on Snapchat. I'm sure Instagram will integrate those things later on. But where people are engaging is where I'm going to focus my attention. And so I'm going to keep playing on Snapchat. But my attention, that which the last 6 months has been on Snapchat, is very much on Instagram stories. And I would say even 2 months before that, I was kind of checking out of Snapchat or Instagram altogether. You know, really not. It was Facebook and Snapchat for me at that point, and Twitter. So anyways, it's interesting. It's fun. The other fun thing that I am playing with is I'm already shifted to Christmas. You know, it's August. I'm focused on Christmas.
Wow.
And a new excuse to buy a new toy. And so here's the thing. When I lived in New York, my wife got me a drone because I always wanted a drone.
Yeah.
Legally couldn't fly it in New York. Like, you can't fly it around crowds of people, and there was nowhere that people weren't in New York. So it was illegal, you know, essentially for me to fly it in New York. So now I get to fly my drone in Texas a little bit.
You can fly it over that plane that, the calf's plane, whatever that thing was you drive by. I don't know what open area.
Yeah. I could fly it over the Longhorns.
The Longhorns. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll do that. That's a good idea. I want a 3D printer so bad I couldn't just buy one. Well, I found this thing that Mattel is about to release right before Christmas. It's going to be October, called the ThingMaker. It's about $300, and it's a 3D printer for kids to basically print like jewelry and toys.
Hmm.
And so it's going to be like cheesy, you know, it's not nothing fancy, but this is like a real practical use for a 3D printer. I'm so pumped about 3D printing and like the future of that. You shared with me an interesting thing that people are doing with 3D printer on Pokemon.
Mashable has been shared a story about somebody who is like, you can now like 3D print a thing that goes over your phone so you can easily swipe to catch, and it's kind of seamless. I know I had some friends, I have some friends on staff that have a 3D printer. I know they were joking around with, they had printed something like that. So I know it's not the first time. I've seen a lot of people with 3D printers, like printing cases for Pokemon Go. It's so crazy. I remember you were sharing like the big heart of that 3D printer for your daughter, I don't know if it was for one of your daughters or both, but like you were saying, like you want them to know that they can create anything.
Yeah. I mean, that's my goal with like so much for my kids, is that if they can dream it, you know, they can create it. And I think that starts with some physical, tangible things of, I want to create an orange unicorn. Well, go create an orange unicorn. That's all. Like me as a kid, like I could maybe do that with Play-Doh, you know, but they can like design it and then print it. And then it's like, I want them to be building apps by the time they're 10 years old. You know, like I want them to think through, I wish my phone could do this. Well, let's figure out how to do that. And let's create it. And I think the creativity level of what you can create and then execute on at a young age is just going to be so tremendous. And I think 3D printers are just going to shape their mind to be able to think through, I can do anything. Just about anything from a creative standpoint. And then we'll see where their creative minds go. I heard, and I'm going on a big tangent here, but I heard this was in a YouTube video I watched about education, but they said that they gave a paper clip to a 5-year-old and they said, what can you do with this? And that 5-year-old came up with 100 different things that you can do with it. And they gave it to a 15-year-old and the 15-year-old could think of one thing you could do with it. 15-year-old thought, it's a paper clip. You use it to hold paper. Well, the 5-year-old said, oh, this can be an ornament, you know, or this can be I can turn this into a cat. This can be, and essentially what they said is, as you get older, you get dumber because your mind stops thinking creatively and you just think this is the function. And I want my kids to just, anyways, I could go, I'm on a tangent. I could go on a further tangent about
it. I saw on Mashable, they had some robot thing where it was like this little tiny robot was teaching kids how to code. And it's like, and I know that's ultimately what we're moving towards. If we have, you know, so few of the population know how to like, in a productive way, code, that as our kids grow up in that language, it will become overly saturated and it will be, you know, more affordable and will lead. And so I know that's kind of like that gap of like early adopters versus late adopters. So it's definitely something that, I mean, I know it, there's definitely a lot of stuff that I can do in my job, you know, that just from using my computer that is not it's not complicated. It's just stuff that I know how to do. And, but just because I have a little bit of that edge.
Right.
And because I had a dad who, I had a dad and a mom who like, and some grandparents that put me around some devices, I was able to, you know, adapt a little bit more easily, but that doesn't, but still, there's still a huge gap between, you know, me and, you know, a developer. You know, I might know how to like do this and that, but it's a whole nother thing. I was just learning this week, markdown language, for stuff. Actually, it was actually stuff for the TV app.church. We were trying to document some processes on a wiki doc. And, one of our friends was, that's doing this project with us that was trying to teach me markdown language. And it was like, so funny, like learning a new thing. I was so like anti-learning it. Like I, not that like I was open, but like, I just like, crap, I don't want to like sit here because, and I, and markdown language is for instruction. It's pretty seamless. It's, it is really easy, but it's just another way like you have to write, but it's so helpful in documenting procedures. And it's like, man, let alone like, I remember I still hate, I still don't fully get HTML and a bunch of that stuff. I know how to like do like links and some basic stuff, but it's like, man, I wish, I want my kids to be able to like think that way. It's just like such a powerful perspective.
It's an exciting future. And you and I, we do talk about this all day when we get together. Let's get more tangible. Let's talk about the Olympics. Before we jump into the strategy of the Olympics, what's your favorite Olympic moment so far?
I did really enjoy a brief comical moment when I was watching table tennis and, one of the announcers, Mike, was turned off and it sounded like one of the guys was talking to himself. And I jumped on Twitter immediately and I found like 15 people tweeting about it, which was awesome. You just think about, you live in a world that you can do that. And I was like tweeting people like, oh my gosh, I thought I was crazy. Like I didn't, cause the guy was literally like, and what do you think in this competitive sport? Why, what's the advantage of having a young Olympic team on the US team? And it would just be dead silent. And I was like, and then the guy continued on. So I like, just,
he didn't know.
And so, that was fun. I really love, what's her name? The crazy speed demon, Katie Ledecky or whatever her name is. It's been a blast. I have also enjoyed watching the USA like barely beat a couple teams. And so basketball. So that's been fun. But, and I watched a little bit of golf, but I didn't have the golf channel. So, but anyway, how about you?
You know, I think, you know, swimming's fun. Michael Phelps, just watching him come back and his story around the, you know, purpose-driven stuff and Ray Lewis relationship. Fun to hear his story and then to watch him, you know, come back and succeed, you know, have the success again. Seeing the story of Michael Phelps and then the kid that beat him, you know, and the kid taking a picture with him when he was like 8 years old.
I know.
So that was pretty cool. Dude, and then
so many of those, like Katie Ledeck has one of those and a bunch of other have like photos with him, which is like crazy.
How, it's funny, he doesn't look any different. Like it's like he's like a man that doesn't age. And you know, I think, you know, my daughters, I got two little girls and they're so into gymnastics and my 4-year-old can't understand why my 7-year-old isn't there at the Olympics. She's like, shouldn't Emery be in the Olympics? Like she does gymnastics. But it, you know, they're so into gymnastics and there've been some great stories there on the US, you know, female side. Hey,
if you want to give me a ulcer, just sit me for all of eternity in front of a balance beam. Like the balance beam is the most stressful thing to watch on TV. Like I don't even.
It's the most dangerous thing in the world.
I'm sitting there. I'm like, this is like, I don't even care about Russia, but I'm sitting here like, oh, please don't fall. It just freaks me out.
Yeah. And there's like the 42 year old woman that's doing
female
gymnastics. That's kind of a fun story. Anyway, so many fun stories.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that makes them is social media.
Oh yeah.
Because it's kind of like you have two worlds. You have, you're watching it on TV and then you're like, you're now able to interact with these athletes and interact with your friends about these athletes.
What is the first Olympics that you remember?
Oh, I think, you know, the first Olympic moment I remember is when the diver hit his head on the diving board. I can't remember his name, but most, you know, people, so I'm 36. So people my age.
Was that Barcelona or was that?
No, it was probably after that. I have no idea. I just remember he was doing like a dive where he jumped out, was doing like a backflip or something, hit the back of his head, and then maybe he still won later. Like he bandaged it up and like kept going or something. It's crazy.
It's like so the first Olympics I remember was, for some reason, I remember watching the opening ceremony of Atlanta.
Yeah.
And watching Ali walk in with light the torch.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So I was thinking about that with my kids because my youngest was one when the London Games happened, and now he's 5. And I'm like, that's so weird to think like he's only experienced 2 Olympic Games and how like his life, he'll only experience so many. And so my wife and I were having because she's 4 years older than me, but I was like, do you remember like, because Atlanta was 1996.
Yeah.
So I was 9 or 7. And so it's just interesting to think how the games split up that way. So anyways, that was a selfish question.
So I just remember the diver's name. Greg Louganis was his name, the diver. And then I grew up to rooting for Carl Lewis, who was a runner who lived in Houston. So I'd like seen him. He went to my baseball camp. Or did like a pep talk or something at my baseball camp. I know him. And so those were kind of my heroes, you know, growing up as a kid, watching the Olympics. Did so many great memories. But now I think through TV, like you could just watch like one thing at a time, or now you could watch like 20 different things at a time. The time zones are so different. I think there's so many things that are relevant to churches around broadcast medium, social media. Some of the things to learn from. I think the first thing that you and I were talking about earlier is even the time zone factor of when you broadcast these events, because one, people learn about it immediately through their phone, through push messages, through social media. And so it's really hard to like hold back information, people finding out in advance. Yet you want to have optimal times and you have this like global clock now, you know, so you have people, you have to think about time zones in an even more significant way than ever. What are your thoughts on what you're seeing and what you're experiencing?
Well, I think it's this Olympics is a spotlight of just seeing that we're in a paradigm shift. It just shows the confusion of what a network should do based off how connected we are now. And I think at the end of the day, if your church or your ministry is feeling conflicted on how to push out content and how to position it, just look at NBC and see they're struggling with that, because one of the big pushbacks that they're getting is that they are holding content for prime time. And so they're holding stuff till later and they're showing it prime time. Now, for those who are not connected on Twitter or Facebook or so forth, it all feels new when they're watching it on Channel 4 or, you know, NBC, whenever that channel is for you.
Yeah.
Here in the States, all the prime content, I mean, on the West Coast, shows between 9 p.m. and 12 p.m. And 12 a.m. And so because I'm on Twitter and I'm on Facebook, and one of the things I do is I go to moments on Twitter all the time. I don't care what other – I still enjoy Twitter for that function. Yeah. And, like, I have known who's going to win hours before it broadcasts on NBC.
Right.
NBC is getting a lot of pushback that why, when they have so many networks and so many channels, why are they holding it and replaying it after it's delayed?
Yeah.
The answer is because they can get more viewers.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, regardless of what is the probably makes the most logical choice, doesn't make the most financial choice seem right. And so your ministry is probably, or your church wrestles through that. Like, okay, what do I do? Should we play back? So if you were to, for example, if you were to play back your content all throughout the week, you might be able to get more people by doing a rebroadcast versus an on-demand. Why? Yeah. Because it's an event gathers people. And that might not be the best experience for everybody, but it might be the wisest experience, especially when you're in a phase of transition. But I've just noticed that this highlights that we're in a culture shift, and it's almost like they thought, hey, people will still watch. And I will say, Niels, regardless, like I thought, oh, that's so weird that I can't watch Simone Biles, like, you know, do this live. Yeah. I see it on my phone and I just still watch it. I go home and I turn it on and my wife and I will still, and I'll know, like, I know who won this. I know that Phelps got silver in his second to last swim. Like I knew it, and I still watch the race. And I'm like, regardless of what people think, I'm still sitting here watching it. So yeah,
watching it, but I will say that it is a bummer. Like, I'm tempted to turn off my push messages, but I still want to pay attention, like, to get updates that I'm not watching live. But it frustrates me because I feel like I'm often, and I'll pause something to go do something, and then I'll come back and try to play it. And then I'll be like, oh, so the push message, and I'm like, well, I know what's going to happen. I'll still watch it, but I won't enjoy it as much.
So our local programming right before Olympics goes live, that like here, the our local news, like they'll say, spoiler alert. So they're about to tell you who wins as they go to the broadcast of showing it. Like, and they kind of do the wait, like, okay, we're going to wait, and then we're going to, it's so weird. But I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if I was an NBA. Like, I kind of think they made the wisest decision considering the framework. I don't think it will work in 4 years. Yeah. But I feel like they had one more round of the Olympics to do something like this. But, and that's the weird thing. Brazil is not in this weird time zone for Americans. It's like, it is only a couple hours ahead. And like Beijing, that's another thing.
Yeah.
But no. I don't know. Time zones are super interesting.
They are interesting. The world would be a better place without them. And daylight savings time, like I'm going to get angry even just mentioning daylight savings time, which I think is the dumbest thing ever invented ever.
Yeah. I think the only thing I would add, I do think as a church, it's interesting. I think at the end of the day, thinking through your content is that, we talk about this a lot on the podcast, this idea that you have 52 weeks a year.
Yep.
We tend to always try to make the 52 weeks a year the best thing ever. We can't keep up with that. But what I notice with the Olympics is because they have so much content that's going out in streaming, that they're able to take stories and leverage those stories to drive viewership. And so, hey, by the way, you got to watch this girl, Katie, or you got to watch this fencer, or you got to watch this athlete because of this reason. They're so good at making you, in a quick amount of time, value that person, and you could rally behind that person. So I think in your church's content or your ministry strategy, think about as you're pushing content to that, to your persona, to your person, like they don't care about that chapter in the Bible. They don't care about you as a speaker, but they might care about that story. And so if you can first get that story in front of their eyes, that might drive them to go back and watch that. I don't know. Any other thoughts about the Olympics?
I think just speaking to the same thing you are, I think we talk in the church world a lot about live streaming. And I think we talk a lot about on demand, like Netflix, like, or YouTube, like videos. And I think the Olympics is really showing the value of a simulated live experience because they're really timing what you see when collectively. And then I think where that connects to the social experience is if we're all kind of watching, in our prime time hours, what NBC puts right in front of us, then we're experiencing this together and we're also interacting with it socially at the same time around that. And so it kind of peaks, those trends that we see on Facebook and on Twitter. And so I think there's really something to simulated live experiences as well. That while it just in the online church conversations we've had in the past, it seems like most have moved to live and on demand video content. But I think there's something really to the simulated live, especially around social experiences.
Yeah.
That the Olympics and NBC is doing well. I can't wait to the future Olympics because I think it's going to be way different. I think you and I are living in the TV app world right now. Where that technology is going from a customized experience is going to really be fascinating in the future, in the very near future. And so we're kind of in this transition between mobile, broadcast television, connected televisions, tablets, and multiple devices. We'll always have multiple devices. But it's just, we're in an interesting stage in technology, and watching the social engagement and what NBC is doing, it's just fascinating. So anyways, I think that's my two cents.
Well, if there's something that you notice, especially with technology, with the Olympics, that you want to spotlight and highlight to us, let us know. Use the hashtag SMC podcast. I know I'm going to be watching. I definitely think that you as a church should feel encouraged because I think everybody's still figuring out how to integrate website, maybe to physical presence, both to international, local. I think that's just the dynamic that this merging of global and local It's just really interesting. And I think it's just thinking about online to offline type of strategy. So we will continue to share what we're learning. Go to socialmedia.church to learn more about the show. And don't forget to use the hashtag SNC podcast. Thanks again for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Social Media Church podcast. To learn more about the host, the show, or suggest a future topic, check out socialmedia.church. If you liked what you heard, then take a couple minutes to leave a review on iTunes. Every review helps. Lastly, share the podcast with a friend and use the hashtag SMC Podcast to engage with the host. Thanks again for listening.